The following is a CSPN Media podcast presentation.
Hello, and welcome to Know the Score. I'm your host, Don DeLaRente, and I'm joined once again by my co-host, Mr. The Libra Icon, Dwayne. What's going on, Dwayne?
Not much. Another day. Draft is going on right now, and lots of movement going on in the NBA, and I'm ready to get into it. Let's go.
All right, Know the Score is brought to you by the CSPN. You can find us on the web at cspn.us. You can also subscribe to Know the Score through iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher Radio, all the usual suspects. All you have to look for is KTS Pod-the-CSPN. So like you said, the NBA draft is currently going on as we speak, so I'll let you go ahead and run down the top 10 picks of this year's NBA draft. A lot of names near the top of the board that some people probably don't really have a good read on because we didn't have that much of a college basketball season this year.
We sure didn't because pandemic probably ruined Kansas's best chance at a national title, which may go away in a few years, but that's neither here nor there. So,
So you're saying sanctions might be coming?
It's a possibility. I can see it. The NCAA isn't going away. I do admire Bill Self not backing down and even potentially filing a countersuit against the NCAA as well. So I hope nothing happens, obviously, but the way the NCAA has been going at them, I can definitely see the possibility. Okay. So I'm prepared either way.
Well, good luck. Carolina's 1-0 versus the NCAA.
Yeah, so hopefully Ken's get the Carolina look or something, because I can't bear the fact of the tournament streak going away and other things as well. So, yeah. But to the draft, so the Wolves were number one. They got shooting guard Anthony Edwards out of Georgia with the number one pick. Makes sense in the fact that D'Angelo Russell is a member of the team now. And, you know, you don't need a big man because you got Karl Anthony Towns. So Edwards, it was kind of a back and forth kind of deal between LaMelo or Anthony Edwards at this point. And so the Wolves decided to go with Anthony Edwards.
I think that they may have taken the better choice just because at least Anthony Edwards has played against some decent competition. I don't know the level of competition that LaMelo Ball's played against in Australia. I mean, I'm just saying.
Right. And I think that quality of competition does give Edwards the edge, especially because some of the guys in the draft that have been picked, he's played against already twice a year even. So he's got the SEC familiarity with the competition. I think LaMelo, and by LaMelo, I mean LeVar, kind of screwed his prospects up way early. And kind of just went by the wayside from there, kind of giving Edwards that edge. Warriors number two, James Wiseman out of Memphis. He was basically had those eligibility issues at the start of the college basketball season a year ago. And he ends up going number two. I think he can be a defensive anchor. He can learn from Draymond on the defensive end. I'm sure Draymond's going to be in his ear all the time. Kind of a blow to the Warriors with Klay Thompson potentially having that injury that What was it, an Achilles you said?
Yeah, possibly an Achilles injury. That's what I'm seeing online. They're saying that he was working out and he suffered some type of lower leg injury. Setback for Klay Thompson, setback for the Warriors, who are looking to kind of, you know, be resurgent this year after, you know, having last season just wrecked due to injury. So.
Right. Yeah. So.
James Wiseman. Hopefully. Oh, go ahead. My bad.
Yeah. Hopefully. Hopefully Klay gets, you know, keeps that determined mindset and gets back on track real quick. So speedy recovery, Klay Thompson. Go ahead, man.
I was just going to say that Wiseman definitely helps the Warriors with one of the things that they've been kind of lacking the past couple of years, even with the championship runs, and that was just somebody who's going to be very big on rebounding. If he just comes in there and just averages double-digit rebounds as a rookie, I mean, he'll definitely provide them with a lot coming in. You know, his scoring will be added touch. But if he, like you said, if he can protect the rim, rebound the ball and help spur, you know, the Warriors, what version we get of them on fast breaks and being able to push the tempo, I think that that will be a major way that he can contribute early as a rookie and be a factor.
You know, had a deal in play to just Kayvon Looney, so I think it was him and someone else as well from Golden State. So that made the obvious choice to put James Wiseman at number two.
Yeah, and he's definitely
for the Hornets.
Upgrade over Looney, though. Looney wasn't that great on offense.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, yes, a major upgrade offensively versus. And versus Kayvon Looney, definitely. Hornets were number three, and they chose LaMelo Ball. And, you know, the final chapter of the Ball dynasty, Lonzo currently in New Orleans, LiAngelo signed with Oklahoma City Blue in the G League before the pandemic shut down the G League season. So LaMelo goes number three, probably the youngest player in the draft. The Hornets, they're going to get the star power. But, you know, we know that the question is that we were talking before the show, how's he going to stack up against the NBA talent? Will he, you know, and you also gotta kind of wonder how the point forward is going to work out, especially if you have Terry Rozier and Devontae Graham. Graham averaged 18, a little over 18 a game, and probably what was a most improved player campaign. Terry Rozier averaged over 18 a game. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. James Borrego is going to have some work to figure out with that.
Maybe a three-guard lineup, maybe? Or, like, try to get as many wings out there as possible?
I would say between, kind of have, like, a small ball maybe with Cody Zeller in the middle. And you have Rozier, Graham. You could either put P.J. Washington or Miles Bridges alongside LaMelo. So, yeah, it could be like a – and it could be like a three-guard lineup, three guards forward to center. They will have Nick Batum, who exercises player option. Obviously, I would have done the same exact thing. Even though he probably won't be in those future plans. So I like the pick for Charlotte. if LaMelo wasn't available at three, the Hornets were probably most likely going to try the Russell Westbrook route and trying to get that recognizable name. And it would have probably worked out for Russ because we were talking about how much he needs the ball. And obviously you give Russell Westbrook the ball in Charlotte, he can do whatever he wants there. So
exactly.
But it's a win for the Hornets. I was actually going back and watching the beginnings of Ball in the Family and how LeVar's vision was for all three of his boys to play with the Lakers, but that kind of didn't work out. But all three are two of the three are in the NBA, one's in the G League, but Key King probably get to the NBA depending on what Oklahoma City does in the future. So
yeah, that's not a bad retirement plan for their Mr. LeVar Ball. Hopefully, you know, he keeps his family situation, you know, tight, and everybody keeps the love in the family. And, you know, they look after him when he gets old.
Absolutely.
He's going to be the, I forgot the Stahl brothers, what their dad is, what his name is, but he's got three sons in the NHL. So LeVar Ball is trying to be like him and have three sons in the NBA.
Yes. That's amazing. That was amazing on Eric, Mark, and Jordan in the NHL. And all three actually played for Carolina at one point, which is amazing. Now that I think about it. So Charlotte's getting Michael Jordan. He signed off on it. And I think this will be a real good move. And obviously, he's going to probably get Melo on the Jordan brand team anyway. So is the Hornets, when the pandemic, if and when I should say, when the pandemic is over and, you know, we get full capacity crowds, I expect some sellouts, especially when New Orleans comes to town and Lonzo and Melo go at it in that fact. That'll be fun to watch.
All right.
So the Bulls were at number four. They selected Patrick Williams out of Florida State. I got to shout out Patrick Williams because he graduated from my high school, West Charlotte High. He goes down to Florida State and he gets drafted number four by the Chicago Bulls. And Patrick Williams, 6'8", 7 foot wingspan, plays great defense. He has a good mid-range jumper, very, very good defense, and he can actually maybe even be a 3-and-D guy if he can develop more of an offensive game with Lauri Markkanen and Zach LaVine. And if the Bulls get a chance to just stick together, get this core right, they could be something special in the future. It's just going to be a matter of how patient they're willing to be with this Bulls core.
Yeah, I heard they were flirting around with maybe trying to get the number two pick from the Warriors for Wendell Carter Jr. And it's like, what are they doing? Like Chicago. If you're a fan of Chicago, do not pull that trade off.
Right. Yeah. I'm glad they held off. I'm glad they stayed put. And they got a really good kid, a really special player. And it's really good. It just shows that the Lions still got NBA pipeline going on, so that's really good to see. And I can't wait to see what he does. If he's got the same path from West Charlotte as Kennedy Meeks, and as well as Jeff McInnes, and amongst other players. So great pick for the Bulls. Much love to Patrick Williams, and best of luck to him. All right, number five, the Cleveland Cavaliers. They selected Isaac Okoro out of Auburn, and he is a physical wing. I know this personally because I saw how well he locked down. He locked down a bunch of Kansas players in their Sweet 16 battle with the Tigers in the 2019 NCAA tournament. He is a great defender. He's a very intense defender, and he can be a huge spark plug for this Cavaliers team, much like Patrick Williams. If he can get offensive game, if he can grow offensively, he'll be a great two-way player. So he has a lot of good defensive qualities, raw offensively, but I think this is a good move for the Cavs, and he was probably one of the best players available at this time.
All right, who was next?
All right, so number six, we're going to the Atlanta Hawks. And the Hawks are selecting Onyeka Okongwu from USC. Okongwu is actually a high school teammate of LaMelo Ball's, and he went to USC. This was actually one of the players that the Hornets were strongly considering if at the time when they were looking big man. If James Wiseman was not available, he was going to possibly be as high as number three. He's a great center who can finish at the rim offensively. He shot blocks defensively. 3.5 shot blocks per 40 minutes in college.
That's 1.6 really
steals. Yes, he can not only defend the paint, but he's actually good on the perimeter, which is huge for this day and age with the NBA. When if big men are switching off on the guards, he can actually stay with the guards. So his footwork is really well. 72% from the line as a big man, which you don't see that often. Probably also due to the fact he's 6'9", so that kind of helps out too. This is where he could have some trouble if he's on the interior with like a Clint Capella who's bigger and any kind of traditional centers. He could have issues with there. He could probably get bullied around a little bit. The thing is too, if he can develop an outside shot with his size, he could be a major weapon. But a lot of projections have him as a kind of like, you know, throw it up, he can dunk it, and don't bring it around the rim, he'll block the shot.
Right.
All right, so number seven, we go to the Pistons, and they drafted Killian Hayes, and he is a 6'5". 192-pound point guard out of France. So a 6'5 point guard. The bigger the Pistons going tall here with the point. From what I am reading here, because this is an unknown for me. So basically, he's good on the pick and roll. He can dish it off, or he can take the shot. He has a good mid range and a good step back into the three point territory. Also, he has a lot of experience. You know, he played in France Pro A, Euro Cup, and that makes it an advantage, especially coming from from Europe, where pros are usually developed a little earlier. So one thing that is also a ding on him from the scouts here is he's not as intense on the defensive end as he is offensively, and he does have a lot of turnovers, and he goes left a lot. So if you take him to the right, if teams decide to take him to the right, he's not as good there. So he would probably need to work on moving to the right, using his right hand a lot more. And so this is probably one of my favorite players. I became a huge fan of him at the Maui Invitational in 2019. Obi Toppin, he was drafted to the New York Knicks at number 8. He is from New York, and he gets to play for the Knicks at the Garden. Probably the best power forward in the draft. And I think he probably should have been a lot higher. Maybe, you know, the Hornets or the Warriors could have used him. I think he is a great offensive and a defensive player. He can stretch the floor with the 3, and his defense is amazing. He can steal. He can block shots. He has even played center, so he could be a small ball 5. And he has great spin moves in the post, and he can stretch it out. So I think one thing he'll probably need to work on is when the pick and roll comes, not to overcommit, because if he does overcommit, he either loses man or he'll get blown by. If he can improve his rebounding, I think he has the star quality, and he could probably be the face of this young New York Knicks franchise. My only other concern is I hope Tom Thibodeau does not play him 48 minutes every night and run him into the ground like he did Derrick Rose.
That's probably the one player out of everybody that you've talked about so far who not being able to play in the NCAA tournament hurt his draft stock the most, because I don't think by him playing at Dayton, if you didn't watch the Maui Invitational or you didn't watch the beginning of the college basketball season, you probably didn't know who Obi Toppin was, or you didn't get a chance to see him really play against some of the upper echelon brand name schools that you know. Because, you know, Dayton is in the A-10. But, yeah, that dude right there is going to be a problem. So, if you're right, if he gets in the right coaching system, they don't ask him. They just let him do what he naturally can do, which is just cause havoc, push the ball, shoot the ball. I think he could have a very successful rookie season and could be one of the building blocks for a Nick turnaround. I know that seems very far-fetched, but they got to start somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think they got somebody really special. And I think, you know, the Knicks, even though I love laughing at them, they got to do something. So this could be one of the moves they made to start that turnaround. All right, so the next pick is the Wizards at number 9. They picked Denny Avdija from Israel. 6'9", small forward. Probably he was ranked the best small forward in the draft and the number 4 overall. He was also ranked the best international prospect. He's got the height of a power forward. I don't know about the size, but he also can play. He has the playmaking of a point guard. So if he can, you could probably put him at point forward at times, you know, if John Wall is not available or if John Wall needs time off the ball, You can put him at that. You can make him like a point forward. He can pull up in threes in transition, and he's always trying to drive the ball. I did take a look at a few of his highlights before a few weeks before the draft. He's very aggressive, and he does like to attack at the rim. He does like to run out and make highlight plays or fan out on the 3-point line, and he's good at taking those threes and hitting them. He can make great decisions on that pick and roll. So as much as we see teams do the pick and roll, he has great basketball IQ on when to shoot or when to pass, or if he's the roller, when to roll to the rim, or even be a pick and popper as well. The scouts have also said he's improved on the defensive side. He has improved on his rotation, and he can get some shot blocks as well. So one of the things that he may need to do as well is use his offhand. He's right-handed, so use his lefts a little bit more, as well as, if he is like in one-on-one situations in the ISO, make sure he's able to create his own shot. So
right,
instead of trying to get some help. But I think this could be this could go either one of two ways. He can go Dirk, or he can go Mario Hezonja. So
one of those people you've heard about, the other one flamed out, so you know which one they're hoping.
Right. So that's what the Wizards are looking for in Adija. All right, so because we're doing the top 10, so the 10th pick here, the Phoenix Suns, who just got Chris Paul in the trade. So Robert Sarver is finally making some moves for this team, and why not get a Hall of Famer who is one of the best point guards ever? And now you have Chris Paul, Devin Booker, DeAndre Ayton, and you add Jalen Smith to go alongside DeAndre Ayton. Jalen Smith goes 10th from Maryland, 6'10", 7'2 wingspan. He's good at not just blocking shots, rebounding. He can also step out on the three on the offensive side, so he's very versatile, and he can attack the rim. So one thing he may need to do, though, is do some more squats. Don't skip leg day. And sticks, also, and also he may need to, do better in covering ground on defensive end. If his man goes out on the perimeter, he may need to learn how to, if he plays off too far, if his man is a shooter, he can take the shot. If he plays him up close, he's slower on keeping up with his man, so he might get blown by. So those are the things he may need to work on. But there's a lot of upside. This is the typical power forward, and if he can space the floor and get his hands on a few shots on the inside, it could be a nice brick wall between him and DeAndre Ayton. So this is a pretty good pick. I think because of the trade that with the Suns getting Chris Paul, they kind of passed on Tyrese Haliburton. So this could be a draft riser who can be a good pick. So,
all right. So there you have it. The top 10 this year's NBA draft, the names that hopefully you will be hearing about for the next 15 to 16 years. In the case of LaMelo Ball, maybe a smooth 20 since he's so young. But yeah, we'll see, in a few short weeks, actually, these kids in action. And I don't know, they're not going to have the usual training camps and rookie camps and all of the things that they've had in the past to get themselves prepared to enter NBA season. They're basically going to come from, being shut down for the last 8 months to, now having to go play 72 games. So hopefully injuries can not be a factor for these kids. And, the learning curve won't be too steep as well.
Right. And some notable picks outside the top 10, the aforementioned Tyrese Haliburton, he goes to Sacramento at 12. Cole Anthony out of North Carolina goes 15 to Orlando. Tyrese Maxey out of Kentucky goes 21 to Philly. RJ Hampton went to Milwaukee at 24.
That's not a bad pick for them.
Not at all. And Udoka Azubuike out of Kansas goes 27 to Utah.
All right. So there you have it. Some notables for the NBA draft. The NBA making a lot of news this week as the trading frenzy took place here. Not a lot of free agency in this little offseason that we're having, but there's been a lot of trades. As Dwayne mentioned earlier, Chris Paul got traded to the Suns from Oklahoma City for Kelly Oubre, Ricky Rubio, Ty Jerome, Jalen Lecque, and a 2022 first-round pick. Suns are trying to capitalize on the momentum of the bubble. They feel like they have a window here while they still have Devin Booker under that rookie contract that maybe they can get some, they can, become a playoff team. And, once you get in the tournament, anything can happen, as we saw with Miami this year. So a big step up for the Suns as they're looking like they're trying to get into the Western Conference mix this year. The world champion Los Angeles Lakers, they traded Danny Green to the Oklahoma City Thunder for Dennis Schroeder. To me, this was kind of a downgrade. I don't think that Dennis Schroeder in the long run will be a better fit for the Lakers than Danny Green was this past year. I understand that he fills the void left by Rondo and being able to be a little bit better on the offensive end and being able to guard your position and bring speed to the team as well. But Danny Green, with that championship experience, being through the wars, having played with LeBron, understanding what it takes to play with LeBron, the leadership, I think they're going to miss a lot by not having Danny Green on that squad.
I agree with that. And then also, Dennis Schroeder is one of those guys who wants to score. And I don't know how he's going to feel about being option number three behind Anthony Davis and LeBron. Also, the Thunder flipped that Danny Green trade and they sent Green off to the Sixers for Al Horford. So Al Horford signed that massive deal with the Sixers. And it did not work out with Joel Embiid. And he goes to Oklahoma City. Danny Green is on his way to Philly.
That'll definitely help them out a lot in Philly because that's kind of what they've been missing is just somebody, since the loss of J.J. Redick, is just somebody who was a bona fide shooter. They thought maybe Tobias Harris was going to kind of fill that role when they traded for him from the Clippers. But that just kind of didn't materialize over the last season. And so that was a big glaring hole, especially with Ben Simmons being, you know, part of your starting five. You're going to need, you know, three shooters on the court at all times. So, yeah, Danny Green definitely should be able to help them out. And the Milwaukee Bucks acquired Drew Holiday from New Orleans Pelicans for Eric Bledsoe, George Hill, and five future first round picks.
Yeah. The 2020 pick, 24, 25, 26, and 27. Also, the Thunder also flipped Ricky Rubio, sent him to Minnesota.
Sent him back to Minnesota, huh?
Yeah. So the Thunder got the 17th pick in this year's draft. Minnesota ended up getting two first-round picks, the 25th in this draft and the 28th in this draft, and Ricky Rubio.
So there you go. You're up to date on the latest from the NBA. The season is starting in about 35 days. December 22nd will be the start of the new season, 72-game season. Something about a new playoff format as well? Are they still kind of tinkering with the 20 teams, with the playing games and everything?
I think that's they're still tinkering with that. I think that will be a very interesting dynamic, especially if you have what, 10 in the East and 10 in the West. So I think that'll be a very interesting kind of deal. I'm actually pulling it up right now. Let's see. Yeah, I don't see anything at the moment about that.
Okay. All right. We're going to shift the talk over to college football. South Carolina, they fire Will Muschamp after their third straight loss. They gave up nearly 800 yards in total offense to Ole Miss. And when you got the job because you're a defensive coordinator mastermind, it's going to be hard to survive after giving up nearly 800 yards on offense and losing three straight. So now South Carolina is looking for a new coach. Looks like they're trying to get their hands on Liberty's Hugh Freeze. Liberty is undefeated right now in the season. They're ranked in the top 25. So it looks like he is the first person on South Carolina's list to try to fill their coaching vacancy. Do you think that South Carolina, I know it's in the SEC, and so just being in the conference itself is attractive, but do you think trapped in between Tennessee, Clemson, and Georgia, that South Carolina is an attractive job?
It's an attractive job, I think. I mean, they do have a great atmosphere. I've been to Williams-Brice in Columbia. It is a great environment. It is tough to get, you know, that talent because of what is going on down in Athens and Clemson and the improved situation in Knoxville. It's not all perfect at Tennessee, but it's improving. I think it can be attractive. I think Hugh Freeze had Ole Miss on the right track before everything fell apart. I think he went through what he went through, and he's got that success going at Liberty of all places. So I think if he gets that job with the Gamecocks, it could make South Carolina that much more relevant. I think, you know, he is that coach that players do want to play for. He can get some of those, flip some of those commits that go to, you know, UGA and Tennessee and Clemson. So, and I think that if he does get there, that will make the Palmetto State battle more interesting, and, you know, does put South Carolina right back in the mix, and, you know, with everybody but Vanderbilt basically in the SEC. So it's very possible. I think it can be an attractive job. It can be an attractive job. So,
all right.
Before we go back in the college football, I did find out that play-in tournament, it is going to happen. So what it entails is the teams that are ranked 7 through 10, and it takes place May 18th to the 21st. So what happens is the 7th place team plays the 8th place team. Winner of that game gets the 7th seed. The 9th place team plays the 10th place team. The loser of that game is gone. Then the loser of the 7-8 game and the winner of the 9-10 game play for the 8th seed, and the loser of that one is out.
Oh, okay. So it's not necessarily like they're going to be adding more playoff teams. They're just going to give the bottom of the divisions a chance to actually make the play themselves into the playoff, play themselves into the 8th spot. Okay, I got
you.
Exactly. I got you. Should be fun. I know they've been trying to, for the longest time, try to reseed the playoffs once we get there, but I don't, you know, after the first round, but I don't think that one is going to have as much staying power as this play-in situation looks like.
It won't. I don't think so, because if 12 of those 16 teams are out in the West, then people ain't going to stay up for that. And you also, people ain't going to stay up for it, and you got the travel, and you're going to have some crazy logistics as well. So I think keeping it East and West and keeping it East and West and, you know, make this play-in tournament is a great alternative.
All right. Back to college football. Wisconsin. They thumped Michigan in their first game in nearly a month. The Wolverines are now 1-3. And I guess the boosters and the alumni and the donors for Michigan are all on the same conference call or group chat trying to figure out where they're going to put the money at in the account so they can get Jim Harbaugh up out of there after this year, because this is a sinking ship, and it is going down really fast.
Yeah.
The only thing that's kind of saving him, is that Penn State is winless. So James Franklin has a little bit bigger of the spotlight on him. But, yeah, right behind him is Jim Harbaugh.
It's been, this is like year 6 of the Harbaugh era?
Yep.
And these are his guys now.
So, yeah. Can't find a quarterback.
Yeah. And I don't. And I also think, too, that the intensity that Jim Harbaugh brings may be rubbing these kids the wrong way. And I think it probably. The thing is with Jim Harbaugh, it's good until it's not. That's how the 49ers tenure ended. It was great while it lasted, but once it started to get ugly, it got ugly. And I think that it's starting to get to this point at Michigan. Not only do you lose 49-11, you lose 49-11 at home. And
to a team who got ravaged by COVID.
And that makes it even worse. And that is a huge red flag. There's no, You've had 6 years to get a quarterback. You had 6 years to establish a pipeline. And I don't know what, I guess for me, I just don't look at Michigan. I've never looked at Michigan football the same since that Hail Mary against Colorado. And that was 26 years ago.
They've won national championships since then, sir.
And I forgot about it. That's how bad it is. That's how bad it is. I forgot they even won a national title since then. So that's why I'm just like, it's one of those things where I don't know how you fix this. Like, if it's even fixable. Like, I have a good friend of mine that lives here who's a Michigan fan. I don't even know how he feels about it, because, yeah, I'm sure he probably, I say Michigan, he might hang up on me and start cussing up a storm about how bad they are. So I don't know what happens here. I just think it's probably time to cut ties with Jim Harbaugh. I think it's probably time for a new voice, because they're not responding. The kids ain't responding, and it's probably just time to end it and just, you know, cut the losses and move on.
You know, it's nothing wrong with being a better NFL coach than a college coach. I mean, Saban was a better college coach than an NFL coach. I mean, it's nothing wrong with that. It, like you said, I just don't think that what Jim Harbaugh brings to the college game is really, especially at a place like Michigan, is really, you know, the best for those kids in that program. It's definitely more of an NFL type style of doing business that he works with, and that probably works with smaller schools with kids who have chips on their shoulders and are willing to do that, you know, working hard and stuff. But I'm pretty sure he's running into Michigan, where there's a lot of kids who, you know, maybe aren't as working as hard as he would like for them to, and there's probably some internal conflict going on between coach and staff and players, as it seems like, because, like you said, I mean, it's they're getting worse. I mean, at least the first couple of games they were competitive, they were in the games, but the last two games, I mean, it's been really bad. So yeah, it's definitely a time for Harbaugh to kind of maybe think about his next move. Definitely wouldn't be adding on too many additions to the old homestead if I was Jim Harbaugh. Might want to get the moving van and the boxes on speed dial.
Yeah. And maybe a job with the Jets or Falcons or Texans could be there.
I think he would probably work better with the Texans, just because they're really, really close to being a good team again, to like being a playoff team. And I think that the coaching and the energy that he would bring to that franchise probably would be the boost in the arm that they needed. He could work directly with a talented quarterback in Watson, not have to go searching for a franchise quarterback or try to groom a franchise quarterback as far as from rookie all the way up. At least he'd have a guy with 3 years experience ready to get that ultimate coaching to kind of unlock his potential. So if I was his agent, I definitely would be looking towards the Texans as probably the spot that he could land and do the most damage right away.
Right.
It would be very helpful if you got David Shaw back on his staff. David Shaw's been pretty successful without Jim Harbaugh. Not so much the other way around.
Right.
Final college football news. Indiana shut out Michigan State to remain undefeated and set up this week's showdown, COVID notwithstanding, against Ohio State. So Indiana, pretty much the surprise besides Liberty of this college football season. They're going to get their showcase game in front of the nation this Saturday against number 3 Ohio State. Too early to call a prediction. Who you got?
Ohio State. Until proven otherwise, I'm going to just go with Ohio State. They have too many weapons, starting with Justin Fields. And I would love an upset, and I would love chaos, because that's what makes college football great, when there's a whole bunch of chaos. And I will be rooting for Indiana because I hate Ohio State with every fiber of my being. But I want to be professional and pick Ohio State here. So
This would be the exact week for chaos to reign supreme, because Tuesday the first college playoff rankings come out. And Indiana beating Ohio State would definitely shake up a whole lot of things in that playoff run. If you're into watching this game, you're going to watch it, and you're going to watch it from a, you know, not from an entertainment standpoint, but from an analysis standpoint and a schematic standpoint. If Indiana can stay in the two safety look, not get manipulated, maybe play cover four, cover two, not get manipulated by the formations into coming into a cover one or cover three, I think they'll have a chance to slow down Justin Fields. He doesn't, in my observation, it's been a couple of games and I was just, you know, I had a thought and I've been kind of watching him closely. Even in the Penn State game, when Penn State was playing back in their two high safeties or playing quarters coverage, he seemed to struggle a little bit. He doesn't like to take the check down when you umbrella the coverage. But whenever that they could, through formation or motion, get Penn State to move into their cover one or cover three defensive look, then yeah, Justin Fields is accurate, makes the right throws, throws the ball up the seam, looks a totally different quarterback. So if they can kind of keep that shell, that two deep to cover four look, and be able to stop the run if Ohio State decides to go that route, I think Indiana can make that game a lot closer, and Justin Fields has a chance to struggle.
Interesting. I'll be looking out for that, definitely.
This is Know the Score. I'm your host, Don DeLaRente. I'm joined by my co-host, the Libra Icon. We're going to transition into our final topic. Well, next to the last topic, we got a little baseball to talk about before we close it out. The NFL weekend that just passed, big news would be that Drew Brees could miss up to a month because he's got three fractured ribs on one side of his body, two fractured ribs on the other side of his body, and a punctured lung after he took a big hit in the second quarter against the 49ers. He finished the half but did not come out to start the third quarter. Jameis Winston and Taysom Hill kind of guided the ship from there. Sean Payton is being real tight-lipped about who's going to get the start this week, but everybody thinking it's going to be Jameis with Taysom Hill sprinkled in some. So first of all, this opens up the NFC South a little bit for the Bucs, even though they've lost a couple of games to the Saints in the head-to-head matchup. We don't know if the Saints are going to be able to post a 5-0 record like they did last year with Teddy Bridgewater at the helm when Drew Brees was hurt. So just first off, the hit that Drew Brees took, and just the prospects of what you see going forward for the Saints with the backup quarterback for at least the next couple of weeks.
Well, the hit was vicious. I mean, it was a wild one, but here's how I feel about this quarterback situation. I know Taysom Hill is kind of like a utility knife. You can put him literally anywhere on the field except the line, of course, but you can put him at running back, put him at receiver, and at quarterback, and you also did spend $21 million over 2 years on him. So that's one reason I'm like, okay, maybe you should probably start Taysom Hill. But here's Jameis Winston, though. Jameis is a former number one pick. This is a huge opportunity to see what he has learned from Drew Brees. And the reason why I say that is because we need to see if Jameis can be more accurate. I mean, he was 6 of 10 passing, 63 yards, not nothing to write home about. But one thing Jameis does that Drew does not do as much anymore is throw the deep ball. So if Jameis can be accurate with the deep ball, which he historically has not been with all the interceptions, this can be something great for him. And it could, and it could lead to a lot more wins for the Saints. If we get bad Jameis, which we have seen plenty of bad Jameis over the years, then it could be a disaster. And I don't know how quickly of a plug Sean Payton will have on this, but if the Jameis that threw 30 interceptions is going to be on that field, he won't be on the field for long. Taysom Hill, he does believe he is a starting quarterback in the NFL. He wants to be a starting quarterback in the NFL in spite of the fact he is, you know, such a utility knife type of player. I don't like the term slash. So I think that this is a huge opportunity. I mean, we saw how it worked for Teddy Bridgewater, 5-0, 70% completion percentage, and he took that to a 3-year, $63 million deal with the Panthers. And in spite of the Panthers being 3-7, a lot of these losses are just the fact that they're a young team, especially on the defensive side of the ball. So I'm not going to say he's on a bad team. He's on a team that just is inexperienced. But Teddy Bridgewater is done. He's put up the same numbers in the course of 10 games with the Panthers. So it's been consistent. And he has shown that he did learn quite a bit from Drew Brees in New Orleans. So it's going to be up to Jameis to see what he has soaked in so far and how he can apply that to his game, where he knows when to check down, when to take the shot, and also, most importantly, be accurate.
DeAndre Hopkins with the play of the year so far. Him and yes. Kyler Murray connect on a Hail Mary to defeat the Buffalo Bills 32-20. I'm sure everybody's seen the play. Great escape by Kyler Murray to get to the outside where he could find the lane to throw. Then he throws a 50-yard rainbow on the run. And DeAndre Hopkins, in the midst of three defenders, goes up with the Jordan glove on somebody's head and picks the ball off.
Jordan Poyer.
And snatches the ball in the midst of those three defenders, comes down with it, and Arizona has put themselves in a position to battle for first place this week when they face off against Seattle. They've already beaten Seattle at home. If they were to win this game, they would have the tiebreaker and basically have the inside track to winning the NFC West, the most competitive division in football. They only would have to make sure that they took care of business against the Rams. Just an amazing effort by DeAndre Hopkins and Kyler Murray. Like I said a couple of weeks ago, I thought that Kyler Murray had been playing a lot better since their Monday night game against Dallas. His passing numbers have been going through the roofs, completion percentage, yards, and touchdowns. Hasn't been turning the ball over. And, they got rewarded for a heck of a play. And they get a win over Buffalo, who played very well in this game. Josh Allen looked really good. Looked like he's starting to get himself back on track after he had a couple of, hiccups there and some high-profile spots on national television. So don't sleep on Buffalo, even though they basically did everything right for 59 minutes and 57 seconds, except for knock the ball down there at the end. They're definitely going to be a threat when it comes to the playoffs this year, and I would not want to have to face Buffalo at home in the snow, more than likely, for your first playoff game, because that could be one and done.
Just don't go up 35-3 and think the game's over. That's all.
The Patriots, they won the second game in a row of the Ravens, 23-17 in a monsoon in Foxborough. That tricky Bill Belichick going deep into the trick play bag. Jacoby Myers throwing a touchdown off of a reverse. Cam Newton not throwing a lot, being more of a runner. The Patriots look like they're kind of going to go back to their 2016 formula, where they're going to just line up with two tight ends and run it and say, here it comes, can you stop it? And then have Cam work off the play action, keeping his throws to probably around 20 to 22 throws a game. High percentage throws where he can complete the passes and move the chains. So what do you think about the Patriots maybe finding their foot in here and get ready to make a run towards the back half of the season?
It's definitely possible. Cam has looked better in the last couple of weeks, playing the Jets, and then playing, going on national television, being able to kind of show that, hey, Lamar, you may have been the MVP, but I was the prototype for guys like you, really, in a sense. So, great. This was a good win for New England. We get into the prisoner of the moment kind of mindset. And I think, we started questioning Bill Belichick and maybe it was Tom Brady, but Bill Belichick kind of saying not so fast. There's still plenty of time left in season to make a run. If anybody can do it, it's a Belichick-led team. Do I think they're going to climb all the way and get Buffalo? I'm not going to go that far ahead, but it's definitely a step in the right direction. Of course, they still got to overtake Miami in order to get to Buffalo as well. But, they did beat the Dolphins. They did beat the Dolphins once. They play them in a few weeks. And then they got the Bills week 16 on a Monday night. So that will be a very interesting game to watch as well.
The New York Football Giants, they defeated the Eagles 27-17 to move into the thick of the NFC East race. The Giants have won three games in a row. Daniel Jones, two games in a row with no turnovers. And the Giants have gotten themselves right back in the mix. And it looks like they may be the team playing the best and having the biggest upswing right now in the division. Philly dealing with injuries and inconsistent play from Carson Wentz. Dallas, we basically have seen probably their last best effort against Pittsburgh. That first half there against Pittsburgh a couple of weeks ago. Washington football team just got to find a way to win. Alex Smith played a career game, set the mark for career completions, career yardage. And they let Matthew Stafford engineer a game-winning 59-yard field goal drive in 69 seconds because Jack Del Rio, for some reason, decides to play prevent defense.
Man away from it.
With 16 seconds to go, first down, they throw it, and they get, 15 yards. They're playing prevent on second down, and they blow the coverage, and the dude is wide open behind the prevent defense, but he didn't catch the ball, thankfully. Third down, Chase Young gets a rough and a passer penalty, and then on the next first down, they just throw a little 10-yard pass, set it up for the field goal team, three seconds left, and Matt Prater comes out, and he hits a low-line drive for 59. And Washington is on the wrong end of a loss. Basically, what's happening with Washington right now is just that they can't strike big. They don't have enough playmakers and a big playability to get the game-tying field goal in this game. It took them 17 plays in the two-minute drill. to get down to score a field goal. And you know, that's a lot of plays without a touchdown. And that's probably what they really needed. The defense has been regressing against the run the past 3 or 4 weeks. And so teams have been able to call him Rivera. So teams have been able to, you know, kind of control the flow of their offense and then been able to run. And that creates big plays off the passing game. Washington's football team really needs to improve at linebacker, especially middle linebacker. They're either going to draft some stud linebacker or maybe Ron Rivera can get on the phone and call his buddy Luke Kuechly, see how he's feeling. And maybe you know we can get
traded. Luke's enjoying being a scout in Carolina. I don't think he's coming back.
We can maybe facilitate a trade and get Luke Kuechly to come fill the middle, because John Bostic is not a good middle linebacker for the style of defense that Ron Rivera wants to play. He wants to have a downhill attacking type of diagnose the play quick and get. Make the play quick type of linebacker core, and John Bostic just does not fit that as a middle linebacker. So some struggles going on there defensively here lately. Offensively though, they seem like Scott Turner and Alex Smith seem to have a good rhythm throughout the game. Scott Turner got a little cute a couple of times in the red zone, especially on the first drive. Looks like they're going to go in and at least get a field goal. Washington has not scored any points on the opening drive at all this season. Only team in the NFL yet to do so. Get 6 yards on a first down play, get inside the red zone, 2nd and 4, and they try a reverse. They lose 11 yards, and the next play they get sacked for 14 yards, and now they're out of field goal position. And then start every game like they've started every game this year, down double digits. By halftime, so they can clean that up and start a little bit better. It'd be interesting to see what their defense looks like playing with the lead, or you know, not having to make every stop so crucial for a comeback. So we'll see what we got this week against Joe Burrow and Cincinnati. Cincinnati looks like they're starting to gain some confidence and figure some things out offensively.
Number one versus number two.
Yeah, their defense has been pretty decent. So we'll see how things look this weekend for the Washington football team. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers, they bounced back, like you said, with that win over the Carolina Panthers, highlighted by the 98-yard run by Ronald Jones. The first half of this game was highly competitive, though. The Panthers came out, and they were sticking toe-to-toe with the Bucs, but then Teddy Bridgewater got banged up, and things changed then. Of course, once you lose your starting quarterback, you know, you're not as effective. It definitely hurt the Panthers in this situation. I don't know what to make about the Bucs, man. Maybe just the Saints are their kryptonite. And, you know, with this Drew Brees injury, maybe it throws off their rhythm. And if they have to play them a third time, you know, it's going to be really hard to beat the Buccaneers, I think, 3 times in a row in one season. It would be an amazing accomplishment if the Saints were able to pull that off, though.
I think if we go to the 98-yard run, that's what killed Carolina. Because I was looking at this earlier today in between calls at work, and Shaq Thompson knew what was going to happen. He communicated everything that was going to happen, but everybody did what they weren't supposed to do, which left the middle open, and Ronald Jones runs straight up the middle and goes 98 yards and has the third longest rush in NFL history and the longest rush against Carolina. Let me talk about the Bucs first, and then I'll kind of expound on the Panthers a little bit. I think Drew Brees just has this team's number. I think Sean Payton has kind of figured out how to defend the Bucs. excuse me, Bucks receivers again and Tom Brady, but like you alluded to, it is hard to beat a team three times. I don't care what sport it is. You know, when you beat a team twice, you know, you want that third game, a team that's lost to the other team twice, especially when the way the Saints beat the Bucks in that second game, that 38-3, just a thrashing that the Bucks got. If these two meet in the playoffs, yeah, it's gonna be an all out drag out battle. Depending on how long Drew Brees is out, this could definitely be a chance for Brady and company to get that retribution and put New Orleans out when it counts the most. As of right now, though, the Saints are the class of the NFC South. They basically have a virtual two-game lead over Tampa Bay. With that tiebreaker, so that's where I stand. I stand on that. It's kind of one of those, you know, you got to kind of stay with the pick until proven otherwise. As for Carolina, like I said last year, it's been a lot of very close losses. This is probably the second loss. This is the second loss where it wasn't in single digits. And ironically, the other loss was against the Bucks. And so the Saints are the Bucks kryptonite. The Bucks are the Panthers kryptonite for this young team. It just shows that experience trumps youth pretty much in anything. And it's just a young team that's, you know, they're 3-7. They haven't played like a 3-7 team until the fourth quarter. Then they look like they're 0-10 team. So it's one of those things where this Carolina team just has a. They're taking the lumps early, and I think taking the lumps early, getting these reps early, will make them better in the long run. And, you know, when get a high draft pick at this point and get one of these top prospects on the positions, either on the offensive side, definitely need a lineman on the interior. And then maybe get another target to go alongside Robbie Anderson as well. So, and DJ Moore and kind of improve that receiving core even better, make them even better.
The Colts defeated the Titans on Thursday Night Football to move into a tie for first place. The Titans were undefeated, but now they've dropped three in a row, struggling a little bit. Ryan Tannehill not making as many plays down the field to complement Derrick Henry's running. And Phillip Rivers, they were questioning maybe he was maybe due to get benched, or maybe that Frank Wright was going to think about making quarterback change, but he was very efficient and led a nice balanced attack as the Colts, like I said, defeated the Titans on the road. Very impressed with the Colts defense. Derrick Henry got loose a few times, but I mean, they pretty much held him in check, did a good job tackling him, and they also had a lot of pressure on Tannehill throughout the game. The Colts, a little bit of a sleeper in the AFC, but I think with a veteran quarterback like Phillip Rivers, they're going to be a dangerous team if they can stay healthy along the offensive line and on defense.
I was going to just say, yes, I think the Colts have always had the Titans number. I mean, there's a one point Andrew Luck beat the Colts like 12 or 13 straight times. And they'll, even with the, And I think the Titans finally split. So I think in the last several seasons, the Colts are like 16-1 against the Titans. So, and these two teams play not this coming week, but the week after in Indianapolis. So a quick chance for full control of the division to happen there. But a lot of these Titans fans here have been mighty quiet as of late. I've not heard as much talk since the 5-0 start. So it's kind of been pretty peaceful for me in that aspect. But yeah, this is a Colts are looking very dangerous. Could be a very big dark horse in the AFC.
The marquee matchups for this upcoming weekend, we see the Cardinals and Seahawks on Thursday Night Football, battle for first place. Titans and Ravens, 2-6-3 teams going at it against each other. The Packers and the Colts should be a very interesting matchup. The Chiefs taking on the Raiders, the only team that have put a blemish on the Chiefs' record this year were the Raiders, so that should be a very fun game. The Raiders quietly, playing very well. They would be in the playoffs right now if the playoffs started. So, the big showcase game for them in front of the nation. See how Derek Carr, Josh Jacobs, and those guys respond. And then final matchup, Monday Night Football, St. Louis Rams versus Tampa Bay Buccaneers. LA Rams, thank you, versus Tampa Bay Buccaneers. The Rams trying to keep pace with the Cardinals or the Seahawks, whoever comes out of the winner of that matchup to, still stay in the hunt for the division race. So got some very interesting matchups, some key battles for division races this weekend. So it should be a lot of fun this coming Sunday in the NFL.
Yeah, and the Raiders put 7 more players on the COVID list, so they are at 11 now before the Sunday night matchup, too. So
we might get a they better hope they don't get a couple more, because that's going to cause a postponement or a cancellation.
Yeah. John Gruden basically said nearly the entire starting defense is on the list. So
oh gosh. Not the group you want to be sick when you had to go against Kansas City, right?
Exactly.
We'll get out on some quick baseball notes. We got 2 baseball notes. Robinson Cano of the New York Mets, the team that the Libra icon here is a big fan of, has been suspended for a whole year due to violating the PED protocols in Major League Baseball, so they will not have the services of Robinson Cano for the upcoming season. And also, Theo Epstein, the general manager of the Boston Red Sox and most recently the Chicago Cubs, a man who ended 2 curses, is stepping down as the GM of the Chicago Cubs. Looks like that he may be looking for a new challenge in his career, and rumor has it that there's been some talk about baseball expanding and coming to Nashville, and maybe Theo Epstein is trying to get things in order for him to slide in there as maybe an owner or to be the president, general manager of a brand new startup baseball club. But Dwayne, we'll go back to Robinson Cano. The good thing about it is, since he's suspended, you won't have to pay him that big money on the contract he's owed this year. But
$24 million. The Mets were responsible for about $21 million of that, so that's $21 million back in the bank. Jeff McNeil, who plays second, short, and third, you can move him around. You could put Ahmed or Rosario from short to second. Andrés Giménez could be at shortstop. They could also sign Francisco Lindor from Cleveland. They could also, and of course now with their new owner Steve Cohen, they're willing to, an owner that's willing to spend, and he's willing to write the checks and let Sandy Alderson do his thing. But even though the Mets don't have to pay him this year, they could eat the last 2 years of the contract in a sense, because Cano's going to be 39 when he comes back. And if the NL doesn't have the DH, it's really kind of not conducive to them to have him out on the field. And this also could put him on the JD Davis. I was going to say this could also keep him in New York, because he has been probably like the top trade target for the Mets, because there's so many good bats on the team, but it's an issue of where you're going to put these players, because he can play first, but that's occupied by Pete Alonso and Dominic Smith. He could play left, but he's a liability there, and he's even a bigger liability at third. So he would probably be one of the biggest trade prospects here. But Robinson Cano probably kills his Hall of Fame chances, because it's kind of similar to Manny Ramirez with the second suspension. And it's even worse because Jarek Kelenic is an all-star for the Mariners, and we get stuck with old Robinson Cano on steroids. Thank you, Mets, and thank you, Will Pons. Fuck you, and I'm glad I don't have to deal with y'all ever again. Okay, I'm done.
And that is how we're going to wrap up this edition of Know the Score. I'm going to turn it over to the Libra icon for his final thoughts and his shout outs and thank yous.
All right. Ironically, that was not my final thought. But shout out to you, Don. Another great week talking sports with you. Shout out to the CSPN. Shout out to my guys at The Push. We actually are going to be recording a couple episodes this coming Saturday. So we're going to be back with the wrestling banter there. My final thought would have to – I'm going to stick with the Mets here, because I – wait, did I do the Steve Cohen thought last week? I think I did.
You sure did.
I did. Okay, I'm not going to repeat that. Okay. Final thought. Let me go to hockey. The NHL did a reverse retro theme. Basically is a mashup of iconic looks from teams past and the looks from now. So a lot of great jerseys. I was a huge fan of the Carolina Hurricanes gray Whalers jersey. I was also a fan of course, the San Jose Sharks putting the original Sharks logo in the middle with the jerseys from the late 90s on there as well. The Dallas Stars had a clean white jersey. And also the Colorado Avalanche, they went back to the Quebec Nordiques days with the Nordiques logo. And of course, you can't forget the Coyotes in Arizona with the Kachina Coyote look. But all 31 teams, if you go on to the NHL page, just look up reverse retro. Definitely a great look. Adidas did a great job with these looks. You get to see a lot of classic looks, but you also get to see a modern twist. I guess you have to include Vegas in this, even though they've only been in the league for 3 seconds. But it's still a great, great thing that, you know, the NHL and Adidas did with these teams. And I can't wait to see when these jerseys come. I know they're going on. They'll probably be on sale in a few weeks, but I can't wait to see them on the ice. I really, really want to get a Canes jersey just to have that old Whalers look with the whale on the shoulders and everything too.
All right, Mr. Libra Icon Dwayne, thank you for coming through once again for another score. I'll give you a big shout out. Give a big shout out to everybody who listens to everything here on the CSPN. We greatly appreciate it each and every week for your support. So please continue to shop with our sponsors on our webpage or become a patron over on patreon.com/CSPN Media. Final thought for me this week. College basketball is getting ready to start for however long of a season that they're going to be able to get in with, you know, the pandemic raging out of control in all circles, whether it's sports or, you know, your neighborhood. The NCAA made a ruling that they're going to hold the NCAA tournament in a bubble type situation similar to the NBA. So we're going to have everybody piled up in Indianapolis, and we're going to get all of our rounds in. Last year, they did not have the NCAA tournament, and they lost a lot of money. And so the NCAA is going to try to ensure that that does not happen this year. So they've adapted this bubble for the NCAA tournament. Hopefully it works out, man. There's going to be a lot of kids, a lot of staff, a lot of coaches, a lot of infrastructure in Indianapolis, and hopefully everybody can stay true to the protocols, and we don't have any, you know, people doing anything outside of the protocols that they set forth once we do get to Indianapolis for the NCAA tournament. Now, I don't know if we're going to get the full 25 games in that they're hoping, probably more like 15. Some teams are lucky 20. So the selection process will probably be a little bit skewed if, you know, teams have multiple games cut off due to concerns with COVID and people getting sick and contact tracing and all that. But NCAA trying to be proactive this year to make sure that the tournament does go on. It may be in April. It may be in May. We don't know. But at least we know that it'll be a bubble, and they're going to try their best bet to keep everybody safe. So good luck to the NCAA tournament. NCAA and the NCAA tournament, they finally stepped up, and they've done a better job with basketball than they ever did with football. And like I said, just hopefully everybody is safe and healthy, and we can get a full college basketball slate in. So next year when the draft comes around, half of these dudes won't be unknowns and big question marks. We'll at least have some type of body of work to go off of.
Right. And also Virginia can finally give up the crown and not be national champion for 2 years.
Oh, Tony Bennett took them long enough to get the title. And they're like, you know what? You get to hold on to it for another year.
Right.
Reward for being the first ever one seed to lose to a 16.
Exactly.
All right. So for the Libra Icon, Dwayne, I'm your host, Don DeLaRente. And now you know the score.